Hey, this is Steve Nash. You're listening to CITR 101.9, the home of the UBC Thunderbirds.
Welcome to Wiener's Barbecue, the Super Bad Edition. We are the Loose Change Trio, and we're going to kick it off with a song from our new album that's coming out February 2008. This song is called Enough Said.
Thank you, guys. That was Dave Wood, Loose Change Trio. They're going to be playing with us all day long. If you want to stay tuned, they'll be playing another tune at 4:55. Just about, what are we looking at now? It's going to be about 5:30 and then a big finale at 6 o'clock. So thanks a bundle, guys. We'll see you again in about a half an hour. Awesome.
And Ward, W-A-R-D, or Dave Ward.
Dave Ward.
Yeah, not Wood.
Oh, I apologize. Dave Ward. I will get it right, guys. I will get it right. You said in the basketball players? They're out there somewhere, the basketball players. Okay, everybody. Welcome to Wiener's Barbecue here on 101.9 FM CIT Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. There you go. A little music to start the show, start the new school year. That's something I'm going to be trying to do every week. And today I have a very special show. I hope you do enjoy it here today. Where'd they go, Jeff? Well, get them in here.
Coming in.
Get them in here. They're wondering what the hell's going on. Watch out the bongos. Don't you touch those. Graham, you're going to have to take this chair here. Yeah, you're going to have to figure this out. We're trying this out for the first time, Alex. I know you've been here before. Yeah, I know you've been here before. So, yeah, just don't touch the bongos. Don't touch the bongos. That's rule number one here. Yeah, that's for you, Graham. You gotta grab that. It's the beginning of the year. We're working out the kinks. All right, cool. We're working out the kinks. With us right now from the UBC Thunderbird men's basketball team, we'll get to them in 1 second, is Alex Murphy and Graham Bath. And on the show today, folks, we're going to have Alex and Graham with us to start it off. And then we're going to have Kate Haggerty and Erica McGinnis from the UBC Thunderbird women's team. And then we're going to go back to a little music. And then at 5 o'clock, we're going to have with us on the show Evan Goldberg, a co-writer and executive producer from the movie Superbad. You saw it, Alex.
So funny.
You saw
it. Actually, one of the funniest movies I've ever seen in my life.
Graham, have you seen Superbad before?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, so we both liked it?
Oh, I liked it a lot.
Okay, boys, I've got a pre-recorded interview. I met up with them earlier this morning. I had to get here at 8 in the morning to do 2 pre-records. McLovin. I've got an interview with McLovin.
Wow.
Later on in the show, thank you. And then we're going to have BJ Bash from Nevada, Las Vegas on, and then we're going to finish the show with a little tennis talk. Bud Collins. Anybody know who Bud Collins is, either of you?
Nope.
Useless. You're both useless. you watch tennis. Either of you watch tennis?
Yep.
I did this
morning. Okay, you know the bald, bearded old guy talks? All right, now you're useless. You're both useless. you're both useless. Well, so every week, though, folks, we're going to have 4:30 to 5 will be a UBC show, and we're going to do this live band thing. I'm going to see how it goes. What'd you guys think? Could you hear it out there?
Yeah, sounded good.
It sounded good,
hey? Sounded good.
I was battling, and I'll get better. I was battling with the levels for a time, but if it sounded good for you guys, then I'm happy because I'm here to please.
Nice.
Awesome. That was a stupid comment, but we'll have to move on from that. All right, folks, with us right now, we're going to get into a little UBC Thunderbird men's basketball. We have a freshman here.
Yep.
We have a freshman, and we have a sophomore. We have a second-year player with us right now, Alex Murphy and Graham Bath. And, Graham, I want to ask you first, of course. You're a kid from Brookswood, same high school Brent Malish went to.
That's right.
Yep. Teammate with you guys. What made you want to come to UBC?
Well, I wanted to win. I had a rough senior season at Brookswood, and my grade 11 year, we had a good year. We went on a few runs and ended up winning Fraser Valleys. And my last year, I missed that feeling of winning, so I came here. I wanted to win.
Yeah, actually, because we actually did games for the AAA high school basketball, and we did Nathan Yu. He had some games, and I saw Nick Adair there. No Graham Bath.
No, we had a team didn't make it there this year. We struggled. We had some inter-team conflicts, and it just wasn't the season we were hoping for.
Awesome. And Alex, back for year number 2. Bittersweet feeling had to be last year, making it all the way to Nationals, Casey Archibald's final year, and then losing round 1. You had a great season, and it just seems that it ended how it always ends here at UBC lately.
Yeah, it's a bit of a plague, but I guess this year we're going to try to get over that.
So what's the feeling, though, Alex? Is this is a UBC basketball team, of course. It's a new-look team. We'll get to the exhibition games against the Div 1 teams in a moment. But no Casey Archibald on the team anymore. Jason Beering left, but really no Casey Archibald. That is the story. How's it working out with no Casey? Because you got to spend a year here when he was the senior. He was the definite guy, and now he's suddenly gone.
That's true, but that is big shoes to fill, for sure. And Chris Dick, I think, is doing a good job so far this season. He's really stepped it up, but we are still struggling for a leader and struggling vocally for a leader, I think, most part. But anybody can step up, and I'm looking to do that.
And what happened in the exhibition games on the weekend versus Div 1 schools? You lost to Oklahoma, and then you had a really bad second half. I got to say it like that versus Air Force. It was
we gave up 66 points in the second half against Air Force, and that is absolutely not acceptable. But, I mean, we're still struggling. It's still early in the season, right? But
how'd it feel good, though, Boise State scoring 106 points in that game? I believe you had 14 yourself in that one. So
everybody contributed. Yeah. It was an awesome feeling from the bench and completely different than the previous night.
What did Coach say after the Air Force game? I heard he was not a happy camper.
Well, the night before we went over, we were all sitting in the team room, and we went over and talked to everybody had something to say, and what are we going to bring to the table the next night against Air Force? And so everybody said, okay, we need more of a vocal leader, all this stuff. But it didn't really happen, and that's what Kev was unhappy about. But we sorted it out in the last game there against Boise State and ended up getting the W.
Awesome. And, Graham, you're a big guy down there, hey?
Yeah, I try my best. I throw my weight around as much as I can.
So I had to ask you what it was like your very first game wearing a UBC Thunderbird jersey against some opposition, facing a guy by the name of Longer on Oklahoma. And they had another guy, he was a top 20 high school prospect coming into the NCAA, Blake Griffin.
Yeah.
That had to be...
Yeah, well, I was a little nervous, I'm not going to lie. Yeah. I was a little nervous, but once I got that jersey on, got warm up out of the way, coach subbed me in the first quarter, so it was nice to get in there early. And I just started battling. That's what I do. I'm not a finesse player. I'm not going to score a lot of points for the team, but I'm going to go and I'm going to bang in there and I'm going to get rebounds, and that's what I tried to do.
Yeah, and it seemed that by Monday, with the rest of the team, you were in more of your element against Boise State.
Yeah, it felt good. It felt good. Like I said, get that first game, get those first minutes out of the way. All nerves are gone. All pressure is off. It's just let's play basketball. That's what I've been doing for 5 years.
So. And the front court, Bryson Cool hurt his knee.
Yep.
Looked like it could have been ugly from what I saw. But the word is 2 to 3 weeks they're looking at. He's getting it looked at today.
I think so. We had him in the trainer's room minutes after it happened. Always a good thing. So he was limping around on it. But, yeah, 2 to 3 weeks. Hopefully we'll get him back in time for definitely in time for the season, which is, I guess, six weeks away now.
Yeah, about 6-7. Yeah, October 25th, your first game versus Trinity Western. Because that is the issue, Alex. It's a lot of depth in the backcourt, but up front, the big bodies, you lost Cody Berg, and you've got Bryson Cool. Matt Ratcher's apparently going to play a bigger role for you guys this year. Mm-hmm. You've got Graham, but that's really the position that you can't afford to lose too many bodies, it seems.
It's true, but on the other hand, I mean, like, in our side of the bracket here, it's not really dominated by big man, and we have one of the best big men, I think, that we play against during the season in Bryson Cool. And obviously role players like Graham Bath here that are going to fill his shoes. And we're not really struggling in that position because we're so, like, our guards are big and can play and are versatile. So I think we're going to be fine.
And Graham, is it a nice situation for you, though, that you are coming into a team and as a freshman where years past, it might have been, you know, there were a lot of bodies there in that starting lineup. But here, I mean, I'm sure the coaches have said to you, you're going to be playing some big minutes this year.
No, it felt good. That was one of the things when I was choosing a school, I wanted to get minutes. And I talked to Coach Hansen, and I told him that. And he said to me, we're going to try and get you in. And he did that this weekend. And, you know, if he puts me in, I'm going to play hard. I'm going to work my tail off. And
You could swear. You swear a little. I like that.
And do what I do best. So, no, it's good. It's all good.
Awesome. And here's a guy, though.
Yeah.
Come playoffs, this guy right here. You're going to need, you know, you're playing your Calgary, you're playing your Alberta, you're playing the Saskatchewan. If you go to, you know, if and when you go to Nationals, these big bodies got to deliver, hey?
Yeah, for sure. We noticed that in the first round of the playoffs, that's for sure, last year.
So be prepared.
Oh, I'm ready to go, man. I'm ready.
Awesome. And Alex, backcourt. How's it working out? A lot more players back there. What's the situation of the point guards? You and both Nathan, you getting a lot of minutes there.
Yeah, no, he's doing great for stepping in for us. And obviously, Leversage is doing great, too. And we're just, whoever plays well in practice and the game and previous games are going to get playing time. And that's Kevin's philosophy, and you have to respect that, and it's a good philosophy to live by.
And it seemed that we could look for a lot of sets this year where both you and Nathan are out there at the same time.
Yeah, oh yeah. As you saw last year too, Levy and I were doing the same thing too, and it's a good strategy, especially against smaller teams, like pushing the pace. That's what we're trying to do this year, and it's working out well so far.
And a lot of, would you call them swingmen on your basketball team? Matt Racher, you have this Sean Maxwell kid. Kyle Watson played very well for you guys
on
the
weekend. He's playing very well. He's a tough little guy there. But, they're all versatile players. Racher can play in the post. He can play on the wing. So, and same to do with Malish there. But I think we're going to be fine at the big spot because they can all switch in depending on matchups, and that's how we usually work it.
And how are you feeling, Alex, this year? Obviously, last year as a freshman, you know, learning experience, but you got a lot of minutes and a lot of key games. You feel like you're more ready to take on that bigger role this year.
I think so, and I learned from Casey a lot last year for how to be a leader and how to be vocal. I'm still trying to do that, still trying to get out of my shell, but I think this year is the year.
Jordan Yu, assistant coach for you guys, his brother Nathan is also on the team. You got to watch out that he plays little favorites there.
You really got to watch out there. No, he's doing great. He's doing great.
Cool. So things looking good, though, guys. I mean, feeling good, you know. It had to be a good way to end the weekend with the big win, at least.
It's always nice to get that first win out of the way, and then you just roll with it. Like, we got 6 weeks of practices to go. Season starts, and, you know, we're just going to play hard and hopefully make it to Nationals.
Awesome. So same goals as last year. You lost Casey, but nothing changes, eh?
Nothing changes.
Cool. Awesome. Boys, thanks. Whoa, that pen broke. Thanks a bundle, boys. Alex Murphy, Graham Bath, really appreciate it. Graham, you find everything okay? You find getting here okay?
Yeah. I'm finding my way around campus a little bit.
Well, this
now,
is your first day here, isn't it?
I moved in on Saturday, so I've just been doing all these initiation things today. They got a big pep rally and all kind of that kind of stuff, but I'm finding my way around.
Awesome. You taking care of them or rookies on their own? Oh, yeah.
Well, rookies on their own for a little bit.
I'll be all right.
Awesome. Alex Murphy and Graham Bath, guys. Thanks a bundle.
Thanks.
Okay, let's keep things rolling right now. Thanks a lot, guys. Do appreciate it. Keeping things rolling right now, folks, we're going to jump right into the women's basketball for the UBC Thunderbird Athletics. We're going to have Kate Haggerty and Erica McGinnis stepping into the studio right now. The you're much younger than me, but I... Let's not do that. The elder statesman. I'm sorry to say that. I didn't mean to say it like that.
Me?
Yeah. Well, you're the team. You're the veterans on the team.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. The old women. Yeah.
They're old ones. Kate Haggerty and Erica McGinnis stepping into the studio right now. The two fifth-year players for the UBC. Yeah. No, you don't get one today.
Yeah. No earphones.
No earphones today. You can handle without.
Oh yeah.
Come on. You can handle it. And you gotta talk closer to the microphone.
Okay.
There you go. You got it. With us right now, Erica McGinnis and Kate Haggerty from the UBC Thunderbird women's basketball team. You guys have won two national championships. In your 4 years.
Yep. Yeah.
So you've done that. Been there, done that. And, you know, you've got one more year here, so I guess it's... Is it national championship or bust? Is it just go out there and live every moment? How are you approaching this last year, Kate?
Pretty much just try to live every moment, I guess, and take it all in and just take things as they come, not think too far ahead and enjoy the process of it all.
And Erica, your final year, I mean, you know, you had the 10 points, but I will talk about your game on the weekend versus Wichita State in the big win for you guys, 29 points. You were 12 for 12 from the free throw line.
Mm-hmm.
So you're shooting the ball well there.
Yeah, went pretty good.
Awesome. What are your goals this year?
I think, like, this year we have a pretty different team. Like, last year we had the same girls that we've been playing with, like, all our careers. So it'll be a new experience kind of to learn how to play with these different players and kind of it'll be a big goal for us to just make sure we gel together right and just peak at the right times, because I think that's what matters the most. Like, it doesn't matter if you're the best team right now or in January. What matters is March. So
are you both in really good shape is my question. Are we fit? Because I'm looking at your roster. I see 9 players here.
Yeah, I think we're doing pretty good, and if not, we'll definitely get there.
So you have 9 players. Is this correct here? You have 9 players on your roster?
Yeah.
Where did everybody go?
They're around.
Yeah. I see, you know, you don't have to say, but Caitlin Pancras and Megan Pinsky both no longer with you guys, it seems.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you adjust with that, or just beat goes on, or?
Yeah, pretty much. I think, like, as Erica said, this is a different team, and this team hasn't played with those players. So it's not like we're missing them. It's just like we're this team and mm-hmm. there's no missing component right now. Who we are, there's 9 of us and that's all we know. Yeah. So you can't really look at it another way or anything or think what it would be like, because this is us and 9 of us and you just go with it.
You just go with it. Is that all you need though? Can you play a whole basketball season with 9 players? Or I guess if everybody stays healthy, you're okay. But mm-hmm. I mean, you can't have injuries, can you? Or can you?
Well, you never want injuries on a team, even if you have 12, because you get used to practicing with 12. So when you have 11, you're like, oh man, we only have 11 right now. And I think now we have 9 and we have Carrie Watson, our assistant coach, kind of stepping in for 5 and 5 at times. And it's a bit of a different experience because everyone it has to be accountable. Everyone has to contribute on our team this year, and that's that. You know, you can't hide.
Is Carrie better than you, or who wins those battles?
Well, I don't know. I think I feel bad for her because she doesn't really get to warm up first. Deb just throws her in there, and
think we're old. Carrie's got a few years on us. Yeah.
is that how it worked out with you guys? Because when you came in, you were the young kids on the team, and
yeah.
Is that how it worked? And now you just sort of, because there's no really breaking in period for you. Now you're just suddenly the two seniors.
Yeah, it went by really fast.
Yeah. It's hard to believe. Yeah. But it's cool to be on this side of it. I mean, I remember coming in first year and Carrie was kind of the older player and we were all like, oh my gosh, like she's mm-hmm. so old. And now being that player, it's surreal almost. Like, it's crazy to think mm-hmm. about, but it's definitely exciting.
Do you want to get her a game this year where she scores about 30 points?
Me?
Oh.
Do you want to get Carrie?
No? I'm looking at you about Kate. Do you want to get Kate a game where she's just shooting the ball a ton?
Oh, yeah. Like, I think that's one thing. When you ever notice my, if I score a lot of points in a certain game, I can guarantee it's because Kate has made, like, really good passes to me. It's not, like, it's, that's just the way it works. Like, and obviously, I'd like to do that back for her, so we'll see.
Yeah, but that requires me hitting some shots, so I gotta work on that part of it.
She can shoot.
Oh yeah, she can shoot.
Just,
really well.
Just take a game where you're way ahead.
It.
And just keep throwing it up.
Just gotta make 10 threes to get 30 points, right?
Yeah.
You don't want to do that. No, you have no interest in doing that.
Oh, I think it'd be cool, but I don't know. I think that's Erica's thing, and I'm happy if I can, if she scores and I can get her the ball or other teammates the ball, then I see that more as my job. But definitely, like, I want to try to score a bit more this year, and because I think, like, we might need that. Yeah. But whatever's good for the team is what. That's great.
What a teammate, hey?
No. Yeah, the best.
No.
What a teammate. Tell us about your win against NCAA competition. You beat Wichita State 77-64. You had the game throughout. You took a defeat at the hands of Arkansas on Saturday, but you came back with the win on Sunday. Tell us about the win, Erica.
Well, I think our game against Arkansas, we were all a little bit nervous and, you know, not really playing that aggressive. And I think a goal for us on Wichita was just to go out and play and get everyone competing hard, because that's how our practice have been all week. So, you know, it was a lot better on Sunday against Wichita. And we had a lot of different girls stepping up and doing different things, which was great.
So you're still learning what the team is, hey, Kate?
Yeah, totally. Still getting used to people's tendencies and when they want the ball where, all that kind of stuff. And I don't think we're going to know that for a long time and completely click, but we just want to keep making sure we get better every time we step on the floor.
Well, there you have it. UBC Thunderbird, 9 players this year. That is for something, now. Isn't it? For now. Are we out? You
we have open tryouts on Thursday, just to let everybody know.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's a possibility we could pick someone up.
You do need a body or two, don't you? Just in case.
It'd be nice.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely takes one worry away. Yeah. I think if you have an extra body or two lying around.
And SFU still the big rival?
Yes,
always.
They're still good, hey?
Yeah.
They're still good. Yeah. They're still good. Awesome. Well, ladies, best of luck this season. Kate Haggerty from the UC Thunderbird women's basketball
Thank
team
you.
And Erica McGinnis. If you could send the band back in here.
Yeah, for sure.
We could.
I mean, Erica, she's a drummer. Most people don't know that. But.
Awesome. Best of luck this season. First game the same as the men, October 25th versus Trinity Western.
Yeah.
Best of luck, guys.
Thank you very much.
And best of luck at those open tryouts, finding a new player or two. Awesome. All right, folks, we're going to take a break here, but Dave Ward Loose Change Trio is back. Now we're going to have to do the very difficult maneuver of me flicking the microphone over to Dave. And, yeah, he's going to start singing again. After the break, folks, very special guest, Evan Goldberg. He's a writer, executive producer from the hit movie Superbad. Also, after the break, we're going to have a pre-recorded interview I did early in the day with Christopher Mintz-Plasse. He was McLovin in Superbad. Very excited for that. A lot more of Dave Ward, Loose Change Trio. We're going to talk a little football, a little U.S. Open tennis. Hopefully, you do enjoy the show. And then at 6 o'clock, we're going to have our UBC Thunderbird football pregame show among our guests, Julio Caravata and Javi Glatt. Okay, are we ready to do this?
Yeah.
Okay, are we ready to do this? Okay, I got to turn down this. Okay, Dave, here we go. This is a big moment here. This is what we got to do. 1, 2, 3. Smooth.
There we go.
Oh, God. Not as smooth. All right.
I went the wrong way, didn't I?
Go no, it was gold. You did it. Oh, yeah, I think it's front there. There, it's perfect. Yeah, gold.
Take it away, boys.
All right, this one's called Music Maker. Here we go.
Maker, where have you been? I need your black and white keys. Unlock me some sweet release. Caught in the prison of my brain. Question rolling like a landslide, sliding with the rain. Dark clouds closing in on me, loading up with fear. Crack this skull, open up this brain. Let the thunder ring in my ears. Lightning crashes endless through the night. It's keeping me awake. It's more than I can take. I will bend in till I break. My little where have you been? I need the curves of your body to resonate within. Won't you paint this deafening silence over with your song? Won't you play on, brother, play on, while this storm rages on? Dark clouds closing in on me, lighting up with fear. Crack this skull, open up this brain. Out to sea without my bucket to bail. Pull me apart so I can escape myself. This self-involved state is wrecking all my mental health. My little music maker, I need you here and now. My little music maker, won't you teach me how to live? Love, let go, forgive, teach me how to live. Love, let go, forgive, teach me how to live. Let go, forgive, teach me how to love. Let go,
listen to Wiener's Barbecue, and they're not giving me a damn thing for this.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Wiener's Barbecue here on 101.9 FM CIT Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. That was once again the Dave Ward Loose Change Trio. Ah, stop! There we go. Little, there, done. Thanks, guys. So we'll hear back from you guys in about 20 minutes or a half hour. We're currently working on Evan Goldberg. We'll find out from Superbad. But if not, don't worry. We've got you covered. I have a backup plan.
Is this Evan?
Do we got him?
Yeah, all right. I'm with the
all right.
Daryl Meade, and we're ready to go on.
Let's just go. Let's just go. Right now? We're working on Evan here. What's the story?
I have to call you at a different number.
All right, we're calling him at a different number. We're currently working on it. You're listening to Wiener's Barbecue here on 101.9. FM, CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, every Tuesday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. Lots going on the big show today. We've got a band in here. Dave Ward, Loose Change Trio, is going to be with us. We got two more songs from them. If you like what they're doing, we'll give you a lot more info of where to find these guys very shortly. They will be playing another song for us at about 5:25, and then another song at about 6 o'clock. Just so if you're listening, at 6 o'clock, so in 1 hour, we'll begin our UBC Thunderbird football pregame show. UBC will be playing SFU tonight at Thunderbird Stadium at 7 p.m. Our pregame show starts at 6 o'clock. We're going to have Julio Caravata, Javi Glatt, an interview with head coach Ted Gavea. We're going to have an interview with the athletic director, a lot about UBC going NCAA Division I with Bob Phillip. And then we're going to have an interview, of course, with the star running back for the UBC Thunderbirds, Chris Chitsky. So lots to do. We're currently just trying to work on this right now. We got Jeff Sargent here in the studio going mad, going crazy, going nuts. Do we have him? Do we have him? All right, he's on the line. All right, Evan.
Daryl Wiener.
All right. I just want to play this before we get into the interview, okay?
Okay.
Comes a time in every great athlete's career where you got to dig down deep, where you got to suck it up, where you got to prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that you belong here. For Goldberg, the time is right now because the champ is leveling with everything.
Hogan with those patented leg drops has delivered two, and here comes Kurt Hennig to ringside.
And we've got company.
There's Malone and DDP following Hennig.
He kicked out from the Hogan leg drop. That has Hollywood stunned.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, Malone can use the diamond cutter. And look at Goldberg. He's ready.
He's boys.
Okay, there's part one. Now finish him off. Finish him off.
He's calling for it.
This is it. This is it. Your career's on the line here. Do it. Do it. His place will erupt when he picks him up.
He's got him up.
Goosebumps, Evan?
Oh, indeed.
Bigger thrill, Evan. The success of Superbad or Goldberg beating Hogan on that night for the WCW Heavyweight Championship of the World.
I can say that for me, Superbad is a bit bigger, but for my family as a unit, Goldberg.
How much of an inspiration was Goldberg for you?
Well, my dad definitely put him on the mantle.
And I believe he's on the fridge too, isn't he? There's a magnet.
He's on the fridge. I have a Goldberg t-shirt, Goldberg hat, all for my dad.
You have that all?
I mean, imagine if the greatest, javelin thrower in the world came out right now and was named Wiener. You'd ride that wave.
And there was a rumor I heard. I know it's probably not true, but you pushed for this harder. I read this on the internet, is that Evan's character in the movie, which was played by Michael Cera, you originally wanted it to be, and the studio just wouldn't let you do it, but you thought it would work. You wanted it to be Goldberg. I read that.
Not true, but I will tell you this. We were doing interviews for Pineapple Express, which is the next movie we have coming out, and there's two kind of hitmen in it, and Goldberg came in to audition. I didn't know. It said Bill Goldberg. I just assumed it was a different Bill Goldberg, and he just walked in, and it was extremely thrilling. He is monstrous.
But he didn't get the role. Tell me about Goldberg trying out for Pineapple Express.
We just concluded that he's better than us. So best not to mingle with some people we can't compete with.
Awesome. Awesome. We're with right now Evan Goldberg from Pineapple Express. He's the co-writer, executive producer in that movie. Evan, you came from Vancouver. The movie's such a thrill. I will say this right now. It's really big right now in the Jewish community in Vancouver. Are you excited? Have you been back to Vancouver since this movie came out?
I went back just recently for my friend Lauren Hirschfield's wedding, and it was pretty delightful, pretty fun, but the Jewish community is definitely in a hubbub about this.
Awesome. Evan, I want to ask you a few questions about Superbad. You know I love the movie. I actually saw it 3 times, you know, Evan. You know that.
I do.
I paid for it. Did I tell you that?
You did, because you felt bad for the freebies that I got you.
I saw it. You took me to a screening in Los Angeles in March, which I absolutely adored. And then I saw it with your brother gave me a pass. We'll get your brother in a minute, just before it came out. And I figure I got to pay. I got to pay once. The one guy I want to ask you about, though, and your brother hinted this to me. I want to know the movie Hiroki. Is that the character's name?
Maroki.
I'm sorry. It's during the home ec scene where... the Seth character's doing his thing with the girl, making faces, and there's Maroki with the Evan character, and they're having fun, and he does the little kitty cat scene. Tell us how you got Maroki in the movie.
Maroki's a pretty straightforward story. While writing the script, we thought he was the funniest part of it. Just this very, non-important character who just kind of came in for a couple jokes. But pretty much it's just based on the fact that I went to Osler Elementary in Vancouver, and I was... Out of the 50 kids, there was one Punjabi kid and like three white kids, and then everyone else was Asian. So it was just kind of a joke between me and Seth that, like, up until I met Seth and our friend Fogel, every single friend I'd ever had was Asian.
So, but how did you? I heard Maroki was just sitting there as a stagehand. Is that correct, or did you?
No. He's not an actor, though. I don't think. We never really knew the full deal. Maroki's real name is Roger. He was a sweet fella. Haven't seen him since.
Nice. And the other stories, people have asked me to ask you about Superbad, the intro scene where they're dancing around. How did you guys put that one together?
That was my baby. I was sitting with Michael Cera, and we'd shot a sequence in the film. There's a part in the film where he sings a song. He sings These Eyes.
Guess Who? Yep, I remember that one.
We had several alts for that, and one of them was dancing. He just dances to Funkadelic. We didn't end up using it, but... Upon seeing that, we all concluded he was the funniest dancer we knew. So I tried to convince everyone that we needed to keep him after work one day. A roll of film is 10 minutes, but this movie was digital, so it's 50 minutes straight of filming you can do. So I concluded we should fill up an entire roll with him dancing and then use it. My idea initially was for the DVD menu. When you get the DVD, you just eventually would realize that he's doing new stuff and it never loops. But then Scott, in editing, one of the guys who helped out a lot, he came up with I sent in the footage, and he came up with that opening sequence. But, everyone thought me and Michael were, like, completely insane. If it hadn't turned out well, I'm pretty sure I would have lost some friends over it because they were so mad at me making them stay three more hours after they just worked 12 hours.
But he who laughs last laughs best, eh, Evan?
Yeah, now it's my screensaver.
And, Evan, another question people have asked me, and I've been told that there's been these questions about it on the internet. What year does the movie take place in? Or is it no year? Is it miscellaneous?
Until this can't work anymore, I'll say whatever year we're in. there's no year. I mean, in a vague way, like the high school part of the beginning is modern day. The party in the middle, it kind of feels like a little 80s to me, like early 90s. And then the party at the end's back to like modern day. It's not supposed to be anything.
So you cover all angles, hey?
We tried to avoid it so that it can feel, kind of timeless, so that hopefully people can just attach it to their generation.
Your brother, one of the greatest people in the world, who has not wanted to go public with this. I have not seen old Dave do an interview at all yet. He's kept this to himself. Drew the penises.
Yes, indeed.
Your brother Dave drew the penises. And Evan, please tell us how that came about. And did your brother, because I don't know, did your brother draw penises growing up? How did this come about?
Okay. So my brother has always been a great artist. He's always drawn stuff, started off with comic books and started drawing what he saw in them. And he primarily draws comics, but he can also, draw people. He's very talented. And I, when I was young, was jealous. Not so much jealous as I just thought it was cool and I wanted to do it too, so I would trace over his pictures. So I'm kind of, I'm like one-tenth of what my brother is. I'm okay, I can kind of draw. I drew a few of the penises, but it's, I'm a shadow of him. But I would draw in class, but I was embarrassed because I was never as good as my brother. So I would cover up my drawings. I'd never let anyone see. And then one day some girls came up to me and said that they knew what I was doing. And they said, "You're drawing yourself having sex with girls, obviously, and like naked girls," which I wasn't. I actually am very bad at drawing women. I would draw men like ripping each other's spines out and punching each other's heads off, just straight up comic book stuff. But somehow through that, Seth came up with the idea that there's a fixation where he's drawing penises. So in other words, it came from Seth's fucked up head.
But your brother Dave Are you proud of Dave with the work he's done here?
Oh, terribly proud. He's almost a lawyer. I find no pride in that. But he drew some great penises, and for that I am proud.
And the other one is, I'm sure you've been asked this, but it leads into something else. Christopher Mintz-Plasse, you a big fan of this guy?
Yeah, did you talk to him today already?
I interviewed him earlier. We're going to play it right after you.
He's, yeah, we're good friends, even though he's a young lad. He's only 18, but he's a real cool dude. Like, he was more mature than the rest of us. That was kind of weird.
He has a message for you.
He does.
Yeah, this is going to be a part of the interview when I play it in a couple minutes, but he has a message for you. Are you ready? Because he's in Glasgow right now, so I don't know the last time you guys talked. So here's some personal contact.
All right.
Goldberg actually is going to be on the show right just before you. Do you have a message for Evan Goldberg?
Tell him that I miss him, and I miss his body on top of mine.
Did you get that?
Yes. Chris helps me do Pilates.
Awesome. But he... Evan Goldberg with us right now from Superbad. And Evan, give us an inkling of what you're doing now. Are you guys doing the Green Hornet, or what's the story?
Currently, I am inside the editing bay of Pineapple Express. We're editing that still.
Yep.
We'll be done that in about a week, and then we're going full force on the Green Hornet.
So you are doing it. Away you go, hey?
Yeah, we're doing it. Much to everyone thinks it's a bad idea, which makes me think it's the best idea.
did people think Superbad was going to be this, like, when you guys pitched it, do you have any idea this was going to happen? You didn't. You couldn't have.
No. We were just discussing, actually, how we'd love to see some of the people who denied us so we can spit in their stupid jerk faces.
And, Evan, of course, this is a sports show. This is a sports show, as you know, and you're coming on. And my question to you, though, is you and I went to a game at Dodger Stadium. Your thoughts of going to a baseball game at Dodger Stadium. Did you enjoy the experience, or was it too hot for you?
Well, it was everything here is too hot. Vancouver, like, I didn't realize it growing up, but I was born in the perfect climate for me, and I suffer constantly in L.A. But I'm a Goldberg, and just like my brother and the rest of my immediate family, I'm sportsly inept in most cases. But the one sport I played my whole life was baseball. And going to that Dodgers game, getting to go into the press room, getting to go into Dodger Field was really cool.
And the dugout.
And the dugout. And getting drunk was awesome.
Awesome. Awesome stuff, Evan. So Evan Goldberg with us right now. Evan, very much thank you for doing this today.
No problemo, Wiener.
Very much thank you doing this today. So any word for the people out there in the city of Vancouver? This is the first day of school for all those students out there and all those aspiring writers. Any words for them?
Study hard and do something academic because the spot's filled, assholes.
Lay off. I've got it, eh, Evan?
Yep.
Well done. Evan, give us a little intro. I'm going to play the McLovin interview right after you here. Give us a little intro. Who is Christopher Mintz-Plasse? Who is this guy?
Christopher Mintz-Plasse is the greatest actor known to mankind. He's had but one performance, but 10 years from now, he'll be considered the best ever. And he's a gentleman and a scholar and, as of 4 months ago, a high school graduate.
Who's the best actor ever as of right now, Evan?
You know, I'm going to go with Charlene Yee, the little Asian girl in Knocked Up. She's the best actor on earth.
Oh, she was the stoner girl.
Yeah.
Good answer. I'll let you off the hook on that one. Evan Goldberg. Evan, love you for doing this. Thanks a lot. Have a great day.
All right, Daryl.
Talk to you soon. Okay, that was Evan Goldberg from Superbad, and we're going to keep things going right now on the Superbad train. I caught up earlier with one of the main actors in Superbad. His name is Christopher Mintz-Plasse. He played McLovin. Here is that interview. Hope you enjoyed it. I was very lucky that these guys, Evan being one of them, helped me out in getting this interview. So here's my interview with Christopher Mintz-Plasse. McLovin.
Okay, here I am with Christopher Mintz-Plasse from, he is from the movie Superbad. He's off touring Europe right now. And Chris, I asked you this, we had equipment problems, but I'm going to ask you again, who is your favorite Canadian?
It's a tie. It's a five-way tie between Seth Rogen, Evan Goldberg, Matthew Bass, or Michael Cera. Actually, that's four.
And Chris, you mentioned people everybody knows, but you did mention one of my favorite people in the world, Matthew Bass. He was the lead character in your movie in the subplot, The Vegetastic Voyage.
Hell yeah.
I mean, we're getting some of that in the DVD. We're going to see a little more Vegetastic Voyage.
I hope so, for Matthew's sake. That was his 3 minutes of stardom right there.
There you go. Awesome. And Chris, what's it like working for Canadians? Because, you know, you mentioned Michael Cera, Evan Goldberg, and Seth Rogen, two Canadians. What's it like working for Canadians?
They're great, man. I mean, it's not really any different than working with Americans.
Awesome. But do you understand, though? See, they're away. These are L.A. guys nowadays. They're off in Los Angeles. There is a difference between West Coast and East Coast Canadians. Are you aware of that?
No, I've never been to Canada, so I wouldn't know.
Well, just so you know, when you hear Canadians talking about, you know, how I'm all Canadian, if you hear a guy from Toronto and if you hear a guy from Vancouver, there is a difference. Just so you know that.
Okay, that's good to know, definitely.
Just so you know that. Are you a hockey fan, Chris?
Kind of. A little bit. I mean, I'll watch it if it's on, but I'm not a huge avid fan.
Okay, so what I'm going to do right now for you, Chris, because, you know, it is a bunch of Canadians in the movie, and you're from Los Angeles, correct?
Yes.
Okay, are you ready for a Canadian quiz?
Oh, sure.
Okay, here we go. All right, because I asked you hockey. Our first one's a hockey question. Here,
oh, God.
Chris, we've got five questions for you, okay?
I might fail miserably.
Okay, okay. He played for the LA Kings from 1988 to 96 and is the leading scorer in NHL history, and he married Janet Jones. Who am I talking about?
Wayne Gretzky.
Attaboy, that's one.
Nice.
That's one. There you go. Okay, ready for number two, Chris?
Let's do it.
Okay. He played Barf in Spaceballs and was once part owner of the Toronto Argonauts of the Canadian Football League.
John Candy.
Well done. Did you know it from the Canadian Football League part or Spaceballs?
Spaceballs.
Okay. All right, now we're going into multiple choice. Are you ready?
Okay.
What is our national animal? For your record, Chris, I got this one wrong, okay? Is it the beaver, moose, loon, or polar bear?
The moose?
It's the beaver.
Oh, that was my first guess, but then the moose just clicked in my head. But
Chris, it's actually the first day of school today out here on UBC campus.
Oh,
and
wow.
Just so you know, they tell you in multiple choice, always go with your first thought.
You should have told me that before.
Okay, well, now you know. We got two more, okay? You're still doing good. You can still get 4 out of 5 here.
Okay.
Okay. What food do Canadians consume more per capita than anywhere else in the world? French fries, donuts, hamburgers, or macaroni and cheese?
French fries.
Really? Chris, not a good guess. Sorry, it's macaroni and cheese.
Oh, man.
I thought you were going to say donuts, actually.
I thought so, too.
Okay.
God damn it.
Here we go. The final question, Chris. Are you ready? Actually, I'll give you two more. Name the best-selling beer in Canada.
Oh, okay.
All right, you think you can do this one? No, I'll give you a multiple choice here.
Okay.
Okay. Molson Canadian. Have you heard of that one?
Oh, yeah, I love it. It's delicious. Okay.
Holy Cow, Miller Genuine Draft, or Labatt Blue?
Labatt Blue?
You got it, Chris!
All right.
Okay, the last one, okay?
Yeah.
All right, the last one. This is to make it so you pass, a 3 out of 6, okay?
Right.
If you get caught by police in Vancouver with 1/8 of an ounce of marijuana, you automatically go to jail for 1 year.
That's a bummer.
True or false?
False.
Attaboy!
Now I want to come there really bad.
With us right now, Christopher Mintz-Plasse from the movie Superbad. He played McLovin. He played Sammy Fogel in the movie. Did you get to meet Sammy Fogel yet? I know him personally. Have you met him yet?
I did. I met him a couple weeks before we shot the film, and then I met him a couple times in between, and then I met him at the premiere, too.
Was he an inspiration for you in the role?
A little bit. I mean, I kind of wanted to give him my own direction. But I watched him and I studied him a little bit.
Do you feel like you are cheating the world right now in how successful you've got? I mean, are you giving yourself credit for how amazing you are doing in this movie, or are you a little dumbfounded still?
I'm very dumbfounded. I give Judd Apatow all the credit of my fame.
Awesome. And the other questions I have for you, Chris, is what is the best part of your job right now? Because you're traveling the world. You're in Glasgow right now. You're a movie superstar. What's the best job and what's the best part of your job and what's the worst part of your job right now?
The best part would be that everything is paid for on my trips. All the food, everything I can buy, sweatshirts and souvenirs and all that, everything is paid for, which is awesome. And then the worst part would be waking up really freaking early for interviews.
And I'm part of that problem, eh, Chris?
It's like 6 o'clock over here, so you found me perfectly for an interview.
There you go. And I'm the one that had to get up early for you this morning, Chris.
Exactly.
Just so.
See, the tides have turned.
Awesome. And Chris, you're a young guy. You're still in high school, or you just finished high school.
Yeah.
And everybody in the movie, it seems, is older than you. I'm told in real life.
Yeah, everyone. So, Michael's a year older than me.
So what's it like partying with older people all the time?
It's fun. I mean, they all kind of act a little bit immature, so we're kind of on the same mentally age.
And I'm told, Chris, that you are a big fan of ketchup potato chips and all dressed potato chips.
What? Who told you that?
Evan Goldberg told me that.
What? Ketchup potato chips and... Oh, wait. I think I had those once a very long time ago on set. Those are Canadian chips, right?
You know what? I didn't even know they were Canadian, but he told me he gave them to you, and you loved them.
I did, yes. I didn't even remember that until right now.
Tell us about your experience with ketchup and all-dressed potato chips.
I just remember Evan brought them to set one day, two bags, and they were delicious. I ate like half the bag.
But you haven't had them since?
Nope.
So that's another thing you will do when you come back to Canada?
Oh, yeah.
I'll tell you what I'll do, Chris. I'll give them to Evan. I will have for you various flavors of ketchup and all-dressed potato chips for when you come back
Thank
to Canada.
You.
Is
Thank
that
you
fair?
Very much.
What's up?
Thank you very much.
So that's what is that fair as a gift for doing this interview?
Oh, yeah. That's an awesome gift.
There you go. Art, so I'm told, though, that you've actually got another movie coming out that you've done it with Paul Rudd. So you're starring in it. You're starring in a movie. You wrote it with Paul Rudd or something like that.
Oh, I didn't write it, but I'm starring in it with Paul Rudd and Sean William Scott, and the director of Wet Hot American Summer, David Wayne, is directing it. So that'll be awesome.
Is that done or has it started yet?
Right when I get back from this tour, we're starting filming it.
Okay, cool. So what's it about?
It's like Sean William Scott and Paul Rudd are buddies. And they get in some sort of trouble, so they have to choose, they have to do community service. So they choose the Big Brother benefit, where, like, they help younger kids. And I would be Paul Rudd's little brother, and then craziness happens.
Not bad. So are you going to bulk up at any time soon and do some action film?
Possibly. I mean, I'm down to do a Fight Club sequel and then buff up all fat and be all sexy. I wouldn't mind doing that.
You're ready for it, eh, Chris?
Oh yeah, very.
Okay, Chris. I'm gonna pitch you my movie idea. Evan and Seth think it's garbage. Okay.
Okay.
So here it is. I want to know if you'll star in it for me. It's guys are out fishing, and their friend's gone. They don't know what happened, so they declare war on the lake, and the whole movie is them fighting the lake.
Okay. That could be interesting for about 20 minutes. It might get old after a little.
I got to work on it, hey?
Yeah, you know, give it a little outline and it should be good.
Okay, I don't know what I'm doing though, Chris. I'm just happy that I have a movie idea. So.
Right.
I'm just happy that I have a movie idea. So Europe's treating you good? You guys are on your European tour right now and things are just going as good as ever, hey?
Yeah, I'm loving it.
Awesome. What's your favorite part of Europe so far?
London, definitely. Just going, being of age, you know, being able to drink over here is amazing. Just going to pubs every night, that's awesome.
Awesome. Christopher Mintz-Plasse from Superbad with us right now. Chris, a couple questions here, and then I'll let you go on your way. It's the first day of school out here on campus right now.
Oh, very cool.
Okay, so things are popping. So what would McLovin be doing on his first day of school right now, first day of university?
Sleeping in every class I go to.
Okay. Does McLovin have a message for everybody on the first day of school?
Yeah, just don't really try because it's really not that important, school. I think you should cheat off your friends and ditch class as much as you want to. And drink every night and have a party every day.
There you go. And would he be going out with Nicola right now?
Possibly. He might be going out with Nicola and Nicola's two sexy friends.
There you go. He's working it, eh?
Yeah.
And last question for McLovin. Would he be trying out for any sports team?
No. McLovin is not a sports player.
He's not a sports player. Chris, who's going to win the football game right now, UBC or SFU? Who are you rooting for?
UBC.
Yeah. All the way, hey?
All the way.
Awesome. Chris, I really do appreciate this today. I know this is your day off and you're doing this for me, aren't you?
Yeah.
I love you for it.
I'm laying on my bed right now. It's really not that much work.
Evan Goldberg actually is going to be on the show right just before you. Do you have a message for Evan Goldberg?
Tell him that I miss him. And I miss his body on top of mine.
Oh, wonderful stuff. Chris, I do appreciate it. Thanks a bundle.
Definitely. Thank you very much.
Welcome to Wiener's Barbecue. We are the Chase Trio. This next one is called Emmanuel. Man named Emmanuel worked on the dusk most days. Trading bottles for loose change, bottles he collects from the drunks on the banks in the rain. And it goes, some days it goes slow, and it burns. Some days it burns more than the last. We're tired and worn down, but he can't mend his heart, so he works to fill in the cracks. Works for the sun he lost, scouring the banks with the bad back and the weather blue sack, and it goes. Some days it goes slow. Some days it burns more than the last. Emmanuel, I need you now, please come home. Emmanuel, we can't forget the memories, but we need to let go of the past. And it goes, some days it goes slow. Some days it burns more than the last. She sits by the TV, surrounded by still frames of love and the growth of a boy. She kneels beside the bed, prays for her husband, praying, please come. Thank you.
that. Believe it or not, we're talking about sports.
I never thought I could feel so free. Flying away on a wing and a prayer.
Who could it be? Believe it or not, it's just me. CITR Sports, please listen.
Okay, everybody, welcome back to Winner's Barbecue here on 101.9 FM, CIT Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, every Tuesday from 4:30 to 6 p.m., and it is football season again, and with us, you know, we're hoping to get a little sponsor for your segment. You know who I'm talking about, don't you?
Who?
We're not allowed to say yet.
Oh.
You know where I'm. You know where I'm going with that, though.
Eat Vera's Burgers.
Yeah, okay. Well,
Broadway and Granville opening in 2 weeks.
I let you have a little opening there, and you jumped in. Well done. With us right now, BJ Bass, Mr. Las Vegas. And BJ, I just want to start things off before we get into our National Football League talk, going through all the games this weekend that we can fit in during our time slot here. Your thoughts on the Vancouver Canucks' new uniforms?
I don't know. Obviously, being far removed from Vancouver, I don't know what kind of, you know, the general perception around the city is right now. I don't think they're terrible per se. The popularity of the retro uniforms last year and how they pulled them out and the Canucks would always play great in them. I don't know why they just go back to those uniforms full time rather than complicating things and trying to find a middle barrier to keeping the Orca around. I mean, there's no one that really like loves the Orca, so why keeping it around?
Well, the rumor, BJ, what I have heard happened is the Vancouver Canucks the whole time during these jerseys were going to go with the stick and those vintage colors, exactly what everybody thought they were going to do, and that at the 11th hour, just like, because they had to submit it to Reebok a couple months ago, Francisco Aquilini pulled the plug. He's the owner, gets to do what he wants, and he said, we're going with the whale, and that was that.
And I would say, isn't there a member of, isn't one of the marketing guys from the Canucks the next Nike guy as well, and he's from the apparel side of the business, and wasn't this jersey his brainchild?
You've heard more than me. I really didn't delve into it. What I said is all I've got.
Gotcha.
That's all I've got. Are we done with jersey talk, though?
I don't
like them. I'm not a fan of them. I think they're really stupid. I think they're completely ridiculous. But it's
Daryl, it's not the first time that the Vancouver Canucks are going to be wearing a stupid and ridiculous uniform, that's for sure.
When's your last one that you didn't like?
I think the skate logo with the red, the third jerseys for the skate were pretty terrible.
Well, BJ, you and I actually did a show. I'd like to just bring this up. In 1998, remember we did that show over Christmas?
Yes.
Almost 10 years ago today, I declared that my favorite hockey uniform of all time, we were a little whacked out that day, but I declared my favorite hockey uniform of all time was the Boston Bruins Honey Bear jersey.
I said classic.
Anyways, BJ, let's get into a little NFL talk. It is finally here.
I know. It's so great, isn't it?
You and I, we've got our fantasy teams all ready to go. We did our draft a couple weeks ago, and now I get to send in my lineup, and away we go. And I love the way the NFL gives us that little Thursday nugget, that beautiful game to start the season a couple days before Sunday. And we've got a wonderful game to open up with this year, New Orleans at Indianapolis. Well done, NFL.
Well, you know, it's pretty self-serving. You know, obviously it's a great game Thursday night. The Saints-Colts, you know, it potentially could be a Super Bowl preview. It's almost who we saw last year in the Super Bowl. But, you know, the thing is it's so self-serving because rather than, you know, unleashing opening day on Sunday and there's football action all over the country and everyone's getting the same taste at the same time, they do the Thursday game because the NFL Network, owned by the NFL,
has the rights to Thursday night football. And, of course, what do we see? The opening day on Thursday night. So I think it's somewhat self-serving. But it is a great, at least they've given us a great game to do that with.
Yeah, as a fan, I can't ask for anything more. I like the Thursday game. I've got plans. We're going out, and we're going to watch football on Thursday. I got no problems. No problems.
Wouldn't you rather just get, like, deluged with football, like, on a Sunday, just waiting and getting there and then action all over the place? And say it's almost, you know, it's not truly an opening day Sunday, and Thursday's not truly an opening day either because only two teams are suiting up.
I hear you.
I'm just throwing that argument out there. But listen, I'm with you. It's going to be a great football game. And you know, really, it's ripping apart small details because the NFL football season is upon us, and no one can look down on that and not smile.
Well, except for racism, baseball, BJ, and the fact that the owners had way too much power over the players. I wish a happy median could have been found. You know, in the game of baseball, I wish they could bring things back to the late 50s, the mid-50s. Before the Dodgers moved to Brooklyn. But baseball did the same thing is what I'm getting at, is I used to love Monday opening day. It was one of my favorite days of the year, and now they've cheapened it with that Sunday night game before the season starts. So I hear where you're coming from with the football. I hate the Sunday night game before baseball starts on the Monday. I hate it. Hate
it. Yeah, and so, yeah, it makes total sense. But like I said, I mean, you know, the NFL is truly, you know, North America's game right now. There's no sport you know, that has itself, they know what they're doing, and they're really running the league well. Roger Goodell has stepped in, and you know, everyone, Tagliabue's going away, and what is the next commissioner going to do? And I mean, listen, you know, he suspended a quarterback coach for doing steroids. So, I mean, this guy is really all over it. The NFL is a league with the NFL Network, and I mean, they're truly exploding, and it's truly become, you know, America's game, not to, you know, I say North America, but, you know, America's game. It truly has become, and what are we going to see this NFL season? There's always great stories, and there's always, you know, record-breaking performances and players doing things that you never thought possible, and there's so many great storylines, you know, coming into the season that it's going to be a great year.
And a big fun, BJ, from the NFL's perspective, I know you personally put the big bet on Baltimore last year. They were your big long-shot bet last year.
Yes.
You have a hope in the NFL of finding these teams that are 35, 50, 60 to 1. I think the Rams were over 100 to 1 the year they won with Kurt Warner at the quarterback position. You have the ability to find these odds, pick a team, and you've got a shot to win that bet.
And I was going to say, my team this year is the Denver Broncos. I have them at 31 to 1. Those odds have come way down since the offseason. I actually made that bet during the playoffs last year. After they were eliminated on New Year's Day and Darren Williams was killed in a shooting at a nightclub. And I just thought there was a lot of things that Denver was doing, or I thought there was a lot of reason for Denver to really band together as a team. And in the offseason, they made a ton of great acquisitions, and those odds have now really gotten cut in half. So I feel confident with my Broncos bet going into the season.
You just like them because you got Jay Cutler in your fantasy pool.
Well, you know, when you see teams who have won Super Bowls, there's always something there. There's always some sort of story. And listen, you know, looking at almost every single NFL team at the beginning of the season, you can find a story to kind of get behind. But, you know, teammates playing for a dead teammate, and especially when it happened on, you know, remember Denver, you know, should have won that playoff game on New Year's Eve, and they ended up blowing the game, and then the same day, you know, the guy gets killed, and it's New Year's Day, and, you know, I that was a story I liked. That was a story that I was able to bet on, so.
BJ, so you like Denver, and who are some of the players you think?
Well, you know, listen, you're talking about picking a team at the start of the season that is providing good value
now,
BJ, as
far
as a payoff.
That's not my question. What players do you think are going to bust out this year? We've already had our fantasy draft, so you can let the cats out of the bag. And from looking at your team, there ain't much to let out of a bag. I'll put it to you that way. Ooh. Talking to the guy that held on to Michael Vick for 6 years right now.
You know, I like what Baltimore did in the offseason, getting Willis McGahee on the offensive side of the ball, getting Adalius Thomas on the defensive side of the ball. They keep their defense pretty much intact with all the playmakers they have there. You know, the question then becomes, you know, can Steve McNair still get that done at this, you know, this old age, and how many snaps he's taken, and you know, when he was younger, he would run and just get leveled. You know, is he can he take them to the next level? And now, obviously, now there's all this talk that Leftwich is could possibly end up in Baltimore as kind of as a you know, go in there as a third stringer, learn the playbook, learn the system, and essentially become a backup to McNair. You know, I think Baltimore's done some great things. Obviously, the Patriots. You know, they have this ability to just turn their roster over. And yesterday, you know, they released their leading receiver of last year, and that just kind of shows the depth that they've added at the receiver position with Randy Moss, Dante Stallworth, Adalius Thomas on the defensive side of the ball. Obviously, Rodney Harrison was just suspended for 4 games for violating the league's substance abuse policy. So they're without kind of, you know, their secondary leader on the field for the first 4 games. But, you know, Brady, I mean, the Patriots, they always seem to find the players to plug into those spots, to play in the system that the Patriots have been so successful doing it. And listen, I mean, they have to be the favorite to at least win the AFC, if not the Super Bowl this year. And obviously, from the Vegas odds sports betting perspective, they are the favorite to do that.
Seattle this year, Beej, is the party over?
You know, their team is pretty much intact from what they did last year. Obviously, a couple changes. Daryl Jackson goes, which, you know, I think is a good thing. It allows Deion Branch to really serve as the primary receiver in Seattle. You know, Hasselbeck, Sean Alexander, and not another year older. You know, I think that this is the last year of the Holmgren regime. If Seattle's unable to do something, you look at their division has got a lot better in the offseason, and it's going to be a tight race. And I think that, you know, that's the one division where really any of the 4 teams could really put some things together and get going and win that division. So I think Seattle's definitely going to have a tough battle, but this is the year to do it if they're going to do it, because I think that otherwise you look at letting Holmgren go. You have Jim Mora Jr., who's already on the roster as the receivers coach this year, you know, putting him back in the head coaching position and really starting from scratch. I think Holmgren's had his shot, and this is the last year that he'll be able to either perform or move on.
Right. Another division, Beej, that no great team, but you mentioned the NFC West. The NFC East, anybody can win that one. You've got the Eagles, you've got the Giants, who might be garbage this year, Dallas Cowboys and Washington Redskins. That's another one that's up for grabs.
Yeah, you know, I don't know if I'm just kind of dismissing some of those teams too easily. You know, I don't see New York really doing much this year. Listen, I think they're going to win some games, and they have the semblance of a football team. I just, you know, especially, you know, Tiki Barber has come out, and he's writing a book, you know, Tiki Life Off the Field or whatever the hell it's called, and you know, a month after ripping Eli Manning, it now comes out that the book is based on ripping Tom Coughlin, and Tom Coughlin robbed Tiki of passion to play football, and if he wasn't the coach in New York, that Tiki might still be playing football. I think there's too much in the locker room. I think there's too much against Coughlin. I don't see the Giants really being competitive. And on the flip side, I don't know that I really see Washington being all that competitive either. I really think it's going to be Philadelphia or Dallas that really kind of steps up and really kind of, you know, separates the pack between that division.
Awesome. Let's get into some of the teams, the matchups this weekend, Beej. Tell us who you like. And what I want to start out with is two teams that had excellent seasons last year. This is an awesome 1 o'clock in the afternoon Pacific time matchup. You've got your slew of morning games, and then you've got if you're not watching the Seahawks, there's going to be a beauty on Chicago at San Diego. Tomlinson going up against the Bears defense off the shoot in San Diego. That's a great matchup to start the season.
Yeah, that's definitely going to be a great game, and it's funny that you mentioned it. And in the same sentence as you asked me, you know, which games I like or which bets I like this week, I don't buy into Chicago. I'm going to come out and give due diligence and say I'm somewhat biased being a fantasy football owner of Thomas Jones. And you know, I really watched that team a lot last year. And, you know, the way that Lovie Smith coddled Cedric Benson and Rex Grossman and the way they just fell apart in the Super Bowl, I mean, there's not one fan of the NFL that's going to tell you, if it wasn't for the Chicago Bears defense, the Chicago Bears are not in the Super Bowl. You know, I do not see Chicago being as good as they were last year. I see Cedric Benson attempting to take the lead role and not necessarily succeeding in the same way that Thomas Jones was able to do so last year. You know, I don't think there's anyone that's going to tell you that Rex Grossman should be starting in the NFL. I don't see Chicago really being all that competitive. I see them being competitive, but not competitive to the point where they were last year. Again, it's going to be their defense keeping them in games, their defense winning them games, and can Rex Grossman and Cedric Benson not F up to lose? And, you know, I don't really see it, and that's actually one of the games that I really like this Sunday is, you know, San Diego right now is giving up less than a touchdown at home. LT, Antonio Gates, Phillip Rivers, a new coach there. The Marty Ball era is done. You know, I think San Diego is going to continue the role that they've been on. Obviously, a player of LT's stature and ability, enables you to do that. I don't think it's going to be a close game. I think San Diego wipes the floor with them, covers the spread easily.
We'll do a couple more games, Beach. These are two teams that, quite frankly, could have awesome seasons, and if things click their way, you never know. You mentioned one of them already, Baltimore at Cincinnati, two teams with loads of potential this year, but maybe also Rams. We'll find out, but they play each other Monday Night Football at 4 o'clock Pacific. I don't like the two games on Monday night, but Baltimore at Cincinnati, that's also a great game week one.
Yeah, that's going to be a fantastic game, and you know, obviously the questions continue to mount in Cincinnati. If Cincinnati is unable to put it together, I mean, Cincinnati has been kind of, you know, a favorite dark horse team of everybody to come out to win a division, to make the playoffs, to really do something. And they've never really been able to do that. Obviously, they have the weapons on offense. Carson Palmer throwing the ball to Hushmanzada and Chad Johnson, Ocho Cinco, Rudy Johnson out of the backfield. I mean, they have a tremendous offense. What's going on the defensive side of the ball, which is so funny because, you know, Marvin Lewis, the coach of Cincinnati, is supposedly, you know, the defensive architect, you know? And so it's so funny that the offensive hat is really carrying that team. I think Baltimore is a better football team than Cincinnati. And you know, I think, you know, that's a game that I'm not going to bet on. That's a game that I'm simply going to watch as a football fan. You know, it's week one, and it's a little early in the season, and I'm not going to go crazy with it. I'm not going to go overboard on games in which I'm picking just because it's too early. And you know, the NFL is the only league in which a team that went, you know, 2-12 the season before or you know, 4-12 or whatever, you know, can turn it around overnight. And, you know, it really makes me – games like that make me nervous in the first week. I will tell you a game or two other games that I do like as far as betting. Carolina goes into St. Louis this weekend. St. Louis is giving up 1 point at home. Carolina is traditionally a team that has started slow and has really come on towards the end of a season and taken a while to really gel. So I'm going to kind of stick with that tradition continuing and Mark Bulger and Steven Jackson really opening up the offense at home on opening day. That's a game that I like. And you know, I'm not a big fan of laying wood on the road or giving up points on the road going into a divisional game, but I don't see how Cleveland can beat Pittsburgh. I really don't. You know, Cleveland has made the announcement that Charlie Fry is going to start at quarterback, and you know, when after the NFL draft, I came on the show and I talked about Brady Quinn and the fact of how he dropped 20 positions and sitting in the draft room, for 7 hours waiting to get selected on draft day, and how, you know, that was really going to give him drive to succeed at the next level. At the same time, I didn't think he should come out and start the season until I saw what else Cleveland had at quarterback and the way that, you know, albeit Brady Quinn did perform well against second and third string defenses, you know, Charlie Fry and Derek Anderson are not going to get it done in Cleveland. You know, they're not going to compete this year. Why not just give Brady Quinn the snaps and just get it done with and really, you know, start building towards the future? I think that they can win games. I think they put together, you know, the semblance of an offense. I think Kellen Winslow is going to have a fantastic year. It's going to be a great option to dump off and the short passes, you know, for whoever's at quarterback there. And Braylon Edwards at the wide receiver position. You know, Jamal Lewis, I don't think, will do anything at running back. You know, I think I would have liked to have seen Cleveland go a different direction, and that I think Pittsburgh's going to walk in and just smoke them at home.
Awesome. Last game, BJ, I want to get your thoughts on this one because this is going to be the most watched game on Sunday, I think, okay? Forget Chicago at San Diego. 10 a.m., you got to watch this game or you're missing the action. Atlanta at Minnesota.
You know, what's going on with these two teams? You know, I don't get what Minnesota's doing. I understand Adrian Peterson and the kid they drafted out of Oklahoma and how much talent he has and how he can be a game breaker. But that was the only position that they had going into the draft. And, you know, are we're going to go with Tavares Jackson as a quarterback, Bobby Wade, and you know, as a starting receiver? I just don't see it.
BJ,
I don't see what Minnesota's doing.
BJ, I know they fired the coach. He's gone now. But this is the same organization that missed the draft pick. Let's remember that.
Yeah, true enough. And how, you know, it's so funny because Minnesota is such a great football town. And you know, the Metrodome is one of the hardest places to go into and play because it's so loud and crazy in there. You know, I think Atlanta's going to be a little bit better than what people are giving him credit for this year. Listen, I'm not saying Joey Harrington is going to come out and you know, be the next Peyton Manning. We've obviously seen what Joey Harrington's potential is and what he can do. But that being said, you know, I think people are really writing these guys off with some talent on both sides of the ball. And you know, again, talking about stories and how teams band together, you know, you're going to look at an Atlanta Falcons team that's really going to band together against all of this national press that Michael Vick has gotten and the way that it's really hurt the Falcons organization. You know, season ticket sales are down. People are giving up their season tickets. No one wants to cross a picket line to go watch a football game. You could see Atlanta Falcons team really kind of band together here and, you know, kind of an us against the world kind of thing. And they could really, they could eke out, you know, 6, 7, 8 wins this year. I think Atlanta's going to win in Minnesota.
I think you're right. You know, here's a team, you got me there. Here's a team that I had Michael Vick in the pool. I've watched him. He had some real stinker games. And this is a good football team. I agree.
And you know, Daryl, you know, obviously, you know, you owning Michael Vick in fantasy football, that's something that's come up a lot over the last couple of years. And, you know, I said, you know, the Atlanta Falcons are never going to win a Super Bowl with Michael Vick as their quarterback. And it's almost like they get an easy out here. I mean, listen, there's a lot of press that's going on. And Arthur Blank, the owner of the Falcons, owns Home Depot. Home Depot stock is down because a guy, you know, likes to drown dogs. There's weapons there. Jarius Norwood is a great young running back. You know, they signed Joe Horn, a veteran receiver that can ideally, you know, help push Michael Jenkins or Roddy White, you know, up to finally becoming a second receiver. LG Crumpler at the tight end position. I mean, it's not like these guys have no weapons. And, you know, Joey Harrington, you know, if nothing else, he can heave the ball. So, you know, a new coach in Bobby Petrino from the University of Louisville, there's no pressure on these guys. Awesome. No one thinks they're going to win anything. That's a really good place to be for a football team.
Awesome. Beej, love the fact you did this today. And we did. It was our super bad show today, if you don't know that.
Nice.
We had Evan Goldberg and McLovin on the show today.
Those guys are brilliant. If you haven't seen Superbad yet, you need to go see it. It's an absolutely amazing film. And probably the funniest movie that I've seen since Anchorman. That would be, you know, my perspective. And I'll say, speaking of Superbad and the Seattle Seahawks and the home teams, I think Seattle's really going to, Seattle's not giving up a lot of points against Tampa Bay this weekend. I think Tampa Bay is completely disorganized. John Gruden is really having, you know, we were really seeing him fall apart as a head coach. I think Seattle's going to wipe the floor with Tampa Bay. I think that's another easy cover. And go Superbad. McLovin, it's like a sexy hamburger.
Well, hold on. I asked McLovin. It's the first day of university today.
Yes.
Okay. And I asked McLovin what if, as McLovin, I asked Christopher, what's the Mintz Plus, his advice. I interviewed him in Glasgow. He was in Glasgow. The guy set me up with the interview. And I asked him, does McLovin have advice for students on the first day of school? As McLovin, here's what he said, okay? And I want to know if you agree.
What would McLovin be doing on his first day of school right now, first day of university?
Sleeping in every class I go to.
Okay. Does McLovin have a message for everybody on the first day of school?
Yeah. Just don't really try because it's really not that important, school. I think you should cheat off your friends and ditch class as much as you want to and drink every night and have a party every day.
You agree?
That's really inspiring to the youth, isn't it?
BJ, I gotta go. Thanks for coming on. We'll do it next week.
Absolutely.
All right, folks. I am behind here, and I did this interview. I got here so early, I got to do it. We're gonna run behind in our football pregame show. I'm sorry, and they may get mad at me, but I'm going to do it anyways. I'll just have to do shorter with Julio Navi. U.S. Open going on right now. I was able to interview Bud Collins, the Hall of Fame tennis announcer, earlier on in the day. And U.S. Open today, we've got Nikolai Djokovic beat Monaco.
So that went on today. Moya beat Gubris. Chayla beat Wawrinka to go to the quarters. And currently it's Justine Anna Arden and Venus Williams going on. Final interview of the day. Then we're going to get into the Dave Ward Trio Band's going to play their final song. And then we're going to get into the UBC Thunderbird pregame show at about 6:10. I know I'm late, but I did it. Anyways, folks, here's my interview with Bud Collins. And that'll be the end of Wiener's Barbecue for the day. Okay, thanks a lot. Bud Collins, Hall of Fame tennis announcer. Here we are talking about the U.S. Open. All right, here I am with Bud Collins of the National Tennis Hall of the Tennis Hall of Fame, one of the great all-time writers of the game of tennis. And, Bud, here you are live from the U.S. Open, and the big match that's going to be going on is tomorrow night, being Wednesday, Roger Federer versus Andy Roddick. Tell us about this match, a great quarterfinal matchup for you guys.
Well, it's a terrific matchup, but, of course, Roddick got to the final last year. I don't think he's going to get to the semifinal this year. He's 1-13 against Federer, and Federer certainly knows how to play him. I think Andy is a good thing about Andy is he is combative, and he will go at it as though he believes he can win, and that's the only way to go at it. I think he's got to attack Roger. I think he's got to come in a lot and just say it's now or never. He'll get passed a lot, but maybe he'll make some winning volleys too. He was harking back yesterday to Australia, the Australian Open, where he had Roddick. They got to 4-4 in the first set, and he said everything was going well, and then suddenly Roger got hot, and that was the end of the match.
Yeah.
So it just went in a flash. I remember it very well, and I thought, my goodness, this is persecution of the highest nature. But anyway, the thing that bothers me and worries me, I guess, about Andy is that he, in this, here we are in the second week of the U.S. Open, he's played four matches and a total of 10 sets. He's had two opponents quit on him, and so he's hardly broken a sweat, and I don't think that's very good preparation for Federer. Yesterday, his opponent was the Czech Tomáš Berdych, and Tomáš had a set point in the first set tiebreaker. He missed a sickening-looking forehand into the net, and then he pulled out saying he was sick also. So he played two more games after losing the tiebreaker, and he went to the umpire and said, I cannot continue. Andy was sympathetic. They don't know what was wrong with Berdych. He said he had no pain, he had no nausea, he had no physical injury, but he just couldn't move, and he couldn't breathe. And as Andy said, you really need to breathe if you're going to play a tennis match. So that wasn't much of a workout. Andy was there for an hour. And he had against Jose Acasuso. Acasuso won the first set against him in the second round. Andy won two sets, and then Acasuso quit. So I don't think it's very good preparation.
Yeah, Roddick hasn't beaten Federer since Montreal in 2003.
Harry Truman was president, wasn't it?
not quite that far back, but not no. quite that far back. But he hasn't beaten him since Montreal 2003 as a third set tiebreak win for Andy Roddick. Is Federer in Roddick's head? But my other question is, does Roger Federer get up to play Andy Roddick?
Oh, I think so. I think when you're in the quarterfinals of a major, he's always up. He's had a couple of slow starts, losing first sets, but as yesterday against Feliciano Lopez, he lost the first set, but then he came right back, and he had an interesting point. They were at 4-4 in the second with Lopez serving. Lopez had four game points, but Federer wouldn't let him have it. On the break point, Federer pulled a bended like Beckham shot. It was a backhand down the line, was clearly going out, and suddenly it bent in to be good, and that was pretty much the end of Lopez because Federer won 35 straight points on serve.
Yeah, Roger Federer. So he is still hands down the favorite to win this tournament. He's lost a few matches this year, but it's interesting because if Roger Federer wins this U.S. Open, it almost erases these matches he's lost to Novak Djokovic, Guillermo Canas this year. It's almost like those didn't exist if he wins the U.S. Open this year.
Well, that's right. This is his goal. If he wins it, he triples again. No player has had as many triples in history as Roger Federer, winning three of the four majors in 1 year. Of course, he hasn't had a Grand Slam, and Rod Laver was the last to do that, winning all four of them. But
I tend to think that Federer will solve that Paris mystery somehow. I think he will. I hope he will. And I know Rod Laver hopes he will, because he has great respect for Federer. And Rod is not one of these guys that sits there and says, I've got two Grand Slams. Don't anybody come close. he loves to watch Roger play, as I think everyone does, except perhaps the guy across the net.
And attendance is way up at the U.S. Open this year. It looks like they're going to be setting attendance records. Why is it so popular right now?
I can't tell you. I'm delighted by it. They've had 38,000 people on the grounds every day during the day session, and then at night they sell it out 23,700. And it means a lot of money for the U.S. Tennis Association. Does that mean they can buy some good juniors? I hope so, somewhere. Because with James Blake going out yesterday, it leaves Andy Roddick as the last of the Mohicans. And Blake, it was a difficult loss for him because he had 3 match points against Tommy Haas, and 7 times he was 2 points away, and he should have won it. But he didn't win it, and despite all the publicity for James and the wonderful tennis he's played in 23 major championships, he's never gotten to the semifinals.
Right, just a couple more questions here, Bud. One question I want to ask you about: Novak Djokovic beat Roger Federer in the finals in Montreal this year. Is this the new kid on the block? Young 20-year-old, yep.
No, he's the new golden boy. Novak Djokovic, he is on the way. I don't think there's any doubt of that, except perhaps injury. But he's shown us a lot of that. One of the best match, probably the most exciting match of the tournament, was Blake and Haas yesterday. But I think maybe the best played match of the tournament was Djokovic beating Radek Stepanek. And that went to a 5th-set tiebreaker. And it was just a fabulous match. And a nice thing about it, it was played on the Louis Armstrong court. And there were over 11,000 people there, but there was no partisanship. In other words, the crowd just loved the great tennis they were seeing. There weren't any Czechs in the crowd. There weren't any Serbians, maybe 2 or 3. But unlike Blake's matches, there's been tremendous partisanship by the crowd, understandable. And he has an obnoxious group called the J-Block who scream at the opponents very unsportingly and sometimes obscenely. And I don't like to see that, but you can understand how James is a great favorite with the crowd. But when Stepanek played Djokovic, it was just pure tennis, and it was awfully good.
Thanks for doing this, Bud. One last question. We've talked about the men, but we haven't gotten into the women. You have Justine Anna Arden.
Well, let's be more gentlemanly, for heaven's sake.
Of course.
Tonight, Serena plays Justine Anna, the number one player in the game, and everybody's been waiting for that. This is the 12th time they will have met. They've played twice this year at the French and at Wimbledon, and Anna has won both. Serena was terribly flat at the French. I've never seen her play so badly. But if you're playing badly and you've got Anna on the other side of the net, you've really got trouble. At Wimbledon, Serena had injured her thumb in the previous match in a fall, a very serious injury. She had to have it in strained ligaments in her left thumb. And everybody would say, well, she's a right-hander. What's the problem with that? Well, the left thumb is essential to hitting her two-handed backhand. So she says there's no pain anymore. The doctors told her that this is the kind of injury they see from football players, not tennis players. But she's back. And you know, she's mysterious, Serena, because look back to Australia. She had no preparation. She won the title. She was overweight. But she's got that fighting heart. Now she hasn't played since Wimbledon, but she's getting in the shape again. She's come into this tournament much fitter than she did Australia. So I kind of think she'll win. It's always dangerous to pick against the sisters, no matter what.
Who wins the women's side overall?
Venus is my pick.
Awesome. Bud, I really appreciate it. You gave me a little more time than I asked for. Enjoy the weather over there. It's pouring rain in Vancouver today. Enjoy the tennis. Enjoy New York.
It's raining in Vancouver. Well, I hope you know it's very helpful. It'll help you grow, Daryl.
Thanks a lot. Thank you very much, Bud.
All right. Bye-bye.
Hi. We've come to the end of Wiener's Barbecue. Regarding the last clip, it is not raining, but it was yesterday.
This morning, when they did the
clip. So there you have it. He wasn't lying. So we are the Loose Change Trio. Thanks to Daryl for having us on his show. We really appreciate it.
We got a new album coming out called Unstruck Note, February 2008. You can check us out at www.myspace.com/TheDavidWardTrio. We are the Loose Change Trio, but the MySpace is /TheDavidWardTrio. What's even more confusing is that we are a trio and there is no bass player in this room because he was attacked by sharks.
Very sad.
Very sad, tragic, just, you know, a mere 2 days ago. So this next one is in memory of our bass player.
And the shark.
Here we go. This is called, this is a gospel tune to end off the show called In God's Grace. Praise is sweet.